We know the state of Oklahoma.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Thank you for the best one.
Let's get it.
Sorry, I had some little G's in there for you. Anytime you get some G's in there, it's always a good night.
It is always a good night. What is up? What is up, America? You are officially talking sports with the 12th man on a special night, on a Tuesday night. Kind of feels like we're recapping like a Monday night quarterback or something like that, you know, the next day. But again, let's talk some sports. I want to join some fellows who I wouldn't trade at the trade deadline, but would like to keep you guys around for a minute, bro. So let's reach out to my guy.
Better not,
KQ,
if you know
how you
good
feel
for you, bro.
Hey. Hey, not too late. Go ahead, JQ. How you feeling, CD?
Hey, man, we going up on a Tuesday. Got to get that in every chance we get if we do a Tuesday show. I'm doing good, man. Watching a little basketball in NBA game time. Watch that ridiculous triple-double by James Harden. Just ready to talk some sports with my fellas.
Yes, sir. Rob Ford, how you feeling, bro?
Oh, yeah. It's time to make it do what it do. Got a lot of things happening in the basketball world tonight. NBA, college basketball, Kentucky's on the brink of being upset. Oklahoma's on the brink of being upset. North Carolina already have been upset.
Wow.
Well, I don't know if you can call that upset anymore.
I was going to say, I don't know if you can call North Carolina being upset this year. Sorry, Ron, but they're not North Carolina. Oh, you know, Michael Jordan and James Worthy ain't walking through that door.
Sam Perkins either.
Sam either.
Oklahoma 93 all with Baylor now.
Wow. Oh, wow. Rob is providing a little play-by-play. So, as always, as Rob does that, after I did the intro, Rob, I'm sure he'll give us a quick update as far as the scores. But, again, talking sports with the 12th man, if you want to reach out to your boys. And, again, this is kind of interesting because I'm still kind of like, you know, got the hand on the trigger to make sure no one calls and says anything stupid. So, if you're calling the show, realize that you're going to get cut off quickly with some stupid ish. The number to call is 424-243-9519. Follow us at Twitter at the number 12, THMAN Sports. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/talkingsports, 12th man, or if you literally type in 12th man sports, you will find us as well. So, gentlemen, let's kick it off here. Rob, what's the score here, bro?
Well, Vanderbilt 68-65 over Kentucky at
wow.
Rupp Arena.
Okay.
Vanderbilt's
wow.
like nice. 8-16 this year too.
Wow.
Yeah, 8-13 to be exact. 2-6 in SEC.
Wow.
Wow.
All right.
Calipari.
There it is. All right. So Rob, let's talk a bit about the recap of Villanova's road win over Marquette, if you will, sir.
Well, Villanova is constantly proving that they are in the running to be the best team in the country and possibly win the national championship 2 years out of the last 3 years. Obviously won it 2 years ago in that awesome national championship game over North Carolina. But Villanova is showing their depth again. Obviously they lost starting guard Phil Boot. He's probably going to be out for the season. Dante DeVincenzo came in off the bench and went to the starting lineup. Helped Villanova with an 85-82 road victory over Marquette. Of course, Jalen Brunson, yes, people, that is Rick Brunson's son. 31 points on the road at Marquette. Big road win, number one team in the country. They should be there, right there in the mix. Watch Purdue, too. I know JQ follows Big Ten basketball, but Purdue might be in the mix. You got to think Duke might be in the mix. I hate to say that. But Isaac Hall is the big fella down at Purdue. Is going to have them possibly in the mix down here, down the stretch as well.
Yeah, I don't follow too much.
DeVincenzo added 23 in the starting lineup, replacing Phil Booth in the starting lineup for Villanova as well.
Hold on, JQ.
Yeah, I'm a UC basketball man. I said, yeah, I don't really follow Big Ten basketball too much. I'm Big Ten football. I'm all UC basketball. But that's a story for another day. All the Villanova fans can breathe a little easier because Brunson looks like he's that ankle injury is not going to be too severe. And Milwaukee's a tough place to get a win. Marquette, you know, generally plays really good, fundamentally sound defensive basketball. So that's a strong win for Villanova on the road.
Nice, nice. All right, let's talk about the next preview game of Providence at Seton Hall, Rob.
Well, this is a Big East matchup tomorrow night. Both teams are 5-3 in the conference. Both teams underachieving a little bit so far from what they were initially predicted to be. Obviously, Providence were hampered by injuries early in their non-conference schedule, and they had a disappointing loss at UMass. Of course, they got Kyron Cartwright and Alfred Diallo, the two best players back from injuries, so they can possibly make a run here down the stretch. They've won four out of the last five games, with the only loss coming at Villanova. They've had wins over Xavier, Butler, and Creighton. All teams have been pretty successful so far in the Big East. Seton Hall, of course, they were ranked as high as number 13 in the country. Got off to a hot 3-0 start. They've kind of fallen back down to earth a little bit. And they're falling out of the rankings completely with losses at Marquette and Creighton. And they had a home loss against Xavier. So this is a team I think Providence might be able to go on the road now that they have their health and possibly go on the road and beat Seton Hall tomorrow night and possibly make a strong run here for the second to third seed there in the Big East.
Yeah, it's just those two, you know. If you follow college basketball, you want the Big East to be strong, you know, if you're, you know, an old head like I am. So, you know, I'm rooting for those teams to get better just so they can put the Big East back on the map, so to speak, in terms of basketball. Because I just think it's better when the Big East is a basketball powerhouse. You know, you're going to get your ACC as one as well. But I just personally like it when the Big Ten is strong in college basketball. So I'm hoping that turns out to be a good game. And even a loser, hopefully they can springboard themselves to righting the ship, so to speak, and getting themselves back in contention here for the tournament coming up.
Wow, did you guys see the news? Kevin Love out for 6 to 8 weeks with a broken hand. Man, that's crazy.
Yeah. Poor Rob.
All right.
I can't catch a break in fantasy basketball.
I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen anything like it in a week and a half span. That's what I said. If you didn't want to talk about it, I would not have pressed the issue. That is outlandish to have.
DeMarcus Cousins, John Wall, and now Kevin Love all out, and all three on my fantasy basketball team.
That's crazy. And Wall and Love in the same day. That's insane.
And how about Team LeBron's All-Star team? I don't know who Team Kevin Love was on. I think he was on Team LeBron, too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So LeBron, all three of those guys is on Team LeBron's All-Star team, too. Paul George is replacing DeMarcus Cousins in the All-Star game.
Yep.
And I know Andre Drummond is replacing John Wall. I haven't heard the replacement for Kevin Love yet. So, I mean, he'll be all right.
The loss of Wall and Boogie is the hardest too. You can replace Love in an All-Star game kind of format.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Man, but I do gotta say that I was gonna revisit those lineups and figure out how we can make those even because somebody got robbed. You know, whenever you look at that getting picked, man, because that was terrible, Steph. I don't know how you even got that happen. Let that happen. All right, let's do a quick preview here. The Grizzlies at the Pacers.
Well, the Pacers sitting at the number 7 seed in the Eastern Conference, trying to hold on and make it to the playoffs. They've overachieved so far this season. Victor Oladipo, what an incredible season. And it's making that trade not look so bad with the Thunder. This is an easy one, obviously. The Pacers at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Pacers have to be looking like, it's almost – half empty and half full because you look at Detroit getting stronger by getting Blake Griffin and getting another challenger in there. But then you see Washington losing John Wall and them taking a step back. So, it was a little, not that they're rooting for injuries, but for their own ability to kind of move up from the standards, it still gives them a shot to make the playoffs. And for that young team, like you said, that's overachieved, making the playoffs just to get that playoff experience for them, I think is huge for Indiana. And I think they win as well. They're playing pretty decent ball right now, as best as you can expect from Indiana this year. Oladipo, of course, and Miles Turner still, you know, a couple bumps, but still looking like, you know, he can be a building block, him and Oladipo. And maybe somebody that just likes, you know, playing in the heart of the country looks at those two guys and says, you know, y'all aren't talking about Indiana for a free agent destination when you got
Stop
those two guys.
It. Stop it.
They may. They might. They might. I didn't say it was a strong chance. I said they might, though, because it's not two bad building blocks. If you're looking around, like, where can I go where I can still be the guy, but I can, you know, I still have some young guys like Rob talks about with Cleveland not having and Boston having is that young energy to come off the bench and that, you know, just to be able to get up and down the floor. Indiana has that. I mean, you know, they get one piece and, you know, they in the East, they become a contender.
All right. Fair enough. All right. We'll talk about the next one, the Hornets at the Hawks. I'll let you lead with this one, JQ.
I mean, anytime you have anybody versus the Hawks, then, I mean, you're pretty much going to take the Hornets. And, I mean, I'm sorry to say that for all the Hawks fans out there, but they plan for a top three pick.
I
get out of that. Even the broke clock is right twice a day.
He said that like it was a championship.
Right. And anytime, sometimes teams, especially young teams, they come to Atlanta and they just don't know how to play in Atlanta once they get that nightlife in them. So you can never discount that. Going to L.A., going to New York, coming to Atlanta, sometimes, you know, they hitting up the club and aren't fully prepared to play. But the Hornets are trying to showcase a lot of guys. I think they may be active here at the trade down line. So it's incumbent on them to play well to boost their trade value. So I don't think they blow the Hawks out, but I still think the Hornets find enough way to win the game.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I agree. This Hornets basketball team is one that, in my opinion, is underachieved when you look at the personnel on their roster. And they're five games back from a playoff spot right now. Maybe they can make a run here in the second half of the season. But Kemba Walker, Dwight Howard, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, this is a team, in my opinion, that's underachieved big time when you look at their personnel on their roster. And like I said, maybe the light switch comes on here in the second half, and we'll see if they can make a run.
Hey, coaching,
yeah, don't
huh?
forget about
what
Batum. They gave him all that money.
Yeah.
I said, don't forget about Batum. They gave him all that money.
Yeah,
they count on him
Batum.
To be
absolutely.
Yep. All right. Moving right along here, let's talk about the some interesting moves here. And would LeBron joining the Spurs with Popovich and Kawhi Leonard be a good fit? And we'll start with you, JQ.
I mean, you can't doubt Pop, and it depends really on Kawhi in that quad, because I don't think any of us expected him to still be struggling with that at this point in the season. But if you add LeBron to a healthy Kawhi and LaMarcus Aldridge, I mean, yeah, I think they become a strong contender out there, even in the West. The problem is LaMarcus Aldridge thinks he's, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, and he told Pop to trade him because he wasn't using him right. And it's like, come on, L.A. I mean, you still just you. Don't get carried away and get, you know, too big for your britches there. So he might have a Chris Bosh kind of, you know, where he doesn't accept it the same way. Because if that happens, he basically becomes Chris Bosh, if you want to be honest. And will he balk at that and give them everything that he could give them is the only thing that would have concern about that. But, yeah, you put those three together, if they were able to get their harmony right, they'd be nasty. My only other concern outside of that is the spacing. Because LeBron is not really a three-point shooter, and neither is Kawhi. Can they hit some three-pointers? Yes, but they're not three-point shooters. So if you put them out there, you know, it's only so much mid-range game to be had with LaMarcus also occupying that space. So, you know, can you get enough spacing for, you know, the Danny Greens and the Patty Mills of the world to make sure they get their shots and the spacing is right? But it would be very intriguing, and I know LeBron is intrigued by it because Pop has been part of Team USA, and Pop just has that respect around the league. So, you know, anytime you add LeBron to a team with a good coach and some other good stars on that team, it's always going to get them a good shot at being in the upper echelon in the NBA.
Rob, you're on deck, bro.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, is it enough to beat the Golden State Warriors? And I think that's what LeBron James has got to find out, how he can be with the team that can help him to beat Golden State, and that's going to be extremely hard. And I don't know if he can go anywhere that's going to make his team better than Golden State, but obviously it'll still be a really good team if you got a healthy Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, and you know Popovich is going to coach up role players. And you got to have spot up. You got to have good spot up 3-point shooters to have any chance at beating the Warriors. You got to be able to match what they're going to do from the 3-point line as well. But yeah, anytime you can put LeBron, Kawhi Leonard, LaMarcus Aldridge, but still, that team will still need another star to match up with Golden State, and you still need spot up shooters. So you're looking at a number two or number three seed in the Western Conference with that team, but still will be a contender.
All right,
Trae Young, 31 points in the second half, most in any half this season.
Yeah, he had.
Good Lord, Trae Young.
Yeah, that dude is going nuts.
And they came back to beat. Yeah, 44 for the game.
Yep, came back.
They came back and won.
Yep.
Came back and won. Yep.
Wow, it's crazy. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about the next topic here about the Cavaliers. And there's a joke that used to say that the only person that could stop Michael Jordan was Dean Smith, and. Feels like, is that kind of what's happening with the Cavaliers and Isaiah Thomas, Rob? Or, you know, why is the minutes getting limited here?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. Right now, lack of chemistry right now with the ball club. Still fairly new. They're still trying to work them in. And obviously, you know, he's coming off an injury as well. So there's still a little bit of a minute restriction there. I think it's taking some time for him to gel with that ball club. They did have a two-game winning streak coming into tonight. Obviously, they lost against Detroit tonight by 11 points on the road. But I think it's just going to take them some time to mesh with him in that lineup, with him on that roster as well, and build some chemistry. And plus, like I said, coming off the injury as well. And they got to find a way to hide his defensive liabilities, too. He's definitely a defensive liability. And it's really hurting him as well. So they have to find a way to maximize his offensive strengths and hide his defensive liabilities.
Cavaliers don't want to play no defense.
That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point I was going to make. And they thought that they could do that by a certain Tristan Thompson in the center and putting Crowder to the bench. But I don't know if I put Tristan in that kind of, you know, Tyson Chandler in his prime, you know, or Dwight Howard in his prime, you know, defensive center, where he's going to make up for that much space in terms of Isaiah Thomas's defensive liabilities. And I think that's really, if you want to be honest, they're going to say, yeah, we're trying to work him back in. But I think that a good piece of that is the fact that he just cannot stay in front of anybody and play defense. And he's a liability out there. You saw the other day when they came back against Detroit, you know, he didn't even play in the whole fourth quarter. They just put LeBron in the bench unit in, and they were able to win that game there at home against Detroit. But tonight, you know, losing Kevin Love, it's hard to overcome that end game, especially when you already have those kind of issues they have on their team right now. But I agree with you, Rob. I was going to say you took the last point I was going to make. I think it's more so the fact that they've got to get him to buy in defensively and say, okay, you can't just be Mr. Fourth Quarter where you just put the bucket in the basket, You got to also play some defense. You got to stop the other team from scoring as well, and that's just something that he has never excelled at. So they've got a real tricky, you know, fine line they got to walk, because you don't want to alienate him, because you've already seen him come out and say, oh, you know, I'm getting too much credit, you know, too much blame for the defensive liabilities that's going on here. The defense was bad before I got in there. And, you know, you don't. It may be true, but when you're trying to work yourself into the situation, you don't necessarily want to hear him say that. He was also the one I heard that went after Kevin Love for leaving the team with a sickness as well. So they've got some issues with Isaiah Thomas trying to get him happy. So they're walking a thin line, and now it's exasperated with, you know, losing Kevin Love, because even though he's bad defensively as well, he's a three-point shooter, he's a rebounder. A lot of turmoil going on with Cleveland. I just don't know if they're able to right the ship. I mean, they have to sit down and figure out what they're going to do in terms of that Brooklyn pick, because that's really what it comes down to. Do they go all in and try to make a run? Because if they do, that's the only way they can go find somebody, is to include that pick. If they don't, they I don't know if they get out the East.
All right. It's your assault. Last one, JQ. And, you know, I can't wait to talk about this, because this is going to be an interesting couple of weeks here, guys, because there's a lot of different things. I still don't think Isaiah Thomas is happy with Cleveland. I think he still misses Boston, honestly. And that's like trading him to, like, your rival. He's like, man, I don't think he's – I think he's not happy to be there. But that's me.
I agree.
Let's talk about the next one here.
He's a free agent at the end of this year, so he'll have his chance.
Yep, he'll have a shot. Good. I didn't mean to cut you off, Jake. You were going to say anything else there.
No, no, I was going to say, yeah, you're right. And the thing is, that's what I'm saying, if you're Cleveland and you know that, you hear what's happening, you try to take pennies on the dollar for him because you know you're not going to get anything for him. He's going to leave. You try to move him, you know, by trade.
Yeah,
Cleveland's got a lot of moving parts, you know, moving forward.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what the young GM does here in the next couple of weeks.
Yes, sir. All right, let's talk about the next topic here. And this is interesting to hear, like, the Clippers. Obviously, you know what happened. We'll talk about the Blake Griffin trade. And it's messed up because Chris Paul, I mean, Blake, I mean, they all were there and, like, convinced, you know, DeAndre not to leave. DeAndre, remember whenever DeAndre was on his way to freaking sign with Mavericks in his Houston house, and they were like, you know, don't go because we need you, blah, blah, blah. We signed, we're going to take things. And now the Clippers guys are starting to look like the Cleveland Browns of the NBA, bro. It's amazing how this team has gone from just that. And now, granted, there's a couple moves that we can be made, but for now, it's just amazing how this team had so much promise, and they're, again, kind of bringing – you know, bringing memories of the old school Clippers here. So now they're looking at, you know, what's this future like with the Clippers? I would say it's going to be a little murky, but now what's happened with the Cleveland Cavs, it could be a little different too. Excuse me. So what's your thoughts on this, Rob?
Well, I'm not going to say they look as bad as the Cleveland Browns. That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
I didn't mean
like
that.
Boy,
that is. But, like, there's been, like, a mad exodus, and there was so much promise, and then now it looks like, what's there? Who's there?
In my opinion, I think it's time for the Clippers to rebuild, to retool that team. We saw, and I said this numerous times on the show last year and probably even the year before that, that team as constructed was not going to win a championship. That's the reason why Chris Paul decided he wanted to leave. And I think the Clippers realize it. Blake Griffin is a nice player to have on your team when he's healthy. The problem is he has not been healthy for a good portion of his NBA career. And obviously right now they're lacking on the perimeter. Lou Williams is having a phenomenal year as well. But this team, as constructed, is not going to win you an NBA championship. And you got the Golden State Warriors in the same division with you. So this is an opportunity for them to rebuild their roster. They get Tobias Harris, who's having the best year of his career. I think Avery Bradley will be a free agent at the end of the season, so you clear up some cap space. So you'll have some space this offseason to possibly do something. I know there's some reports out there that they want to make a run at LeBron. And so, I mean, that's a possibility. Not sure who they're going to be able to put with LeBron. But they're freeing up some cap space. But they have tried that roster, Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, for about 4 or 5 years. They went as far as they can go. They could never get past the second round of the playoffs, and they couldn't stay healthy. It's time to rebuild that roster, and I actually don't think this is a bad move for the Clippers at all by trading Blake Griffin.
And I would agree with that. I thought their return left a little bit to be desired because it's a lot to protect the first round and the second round pick you can never really count on. You know, it's very hit or miss. It's hard to get Draymond or Isaiah Thomas, you know, one of those second round steals. So you're basically talking about that first round pick in Harris because you can't count on Avery Bradley sticking around. And real quiet, like Avery Bradley was not having a good year in Detroit between his production and his injuries as well. So I thought that the return was light, but I agree. I mean, we talked about it before. What does success mean for the Clippers? And right now it was just the second round, and you're paying that kind of money. And let's not forget, that is a huge albatross of a contract that they have with Blake Griffin, who, like Rob stated, and most people have stated, can't stay healthy. So you get yourself out from underneath that in the first year of that deal. You clear the space with Bradley, and you get that first-round pick. And I think what's happening now is that you're pretty much going to see Jordan and Lou Williams be traded. I just can't see them keeping them on that team. Both of those guys are going to be free agents at the end of the year. You can't let them walk away for anything. I was surprised that they did Blake first because now you diminish some of your trade value for Jordan and Williams because everybody in the league knows you're going to move them, right? Like, you don't trade Blake Griffin to keep those two dudes who are going to walk at the end of the year when you trade the one guy who was under contract for four more years, right? So that's the only thing I can quibble with. You know, I know if you got to strike while the iron is hot and get that deal, if Detroit's willing to make it, if you feel like that's a good deal for you. But if I'm a GM, I'm not going to take, you know, L.A.'s first offer because I feel like I've got the leverage on them because what are they going to do? They're not going to really walk away, you know, unless they just are getting bombarded. But I can't see other GMs, you know, bidding against themselves. Like, why am I going to give this much up? And who's really out there actually pursuing those two guys when they can walk away? So I quibble with the order and the way they did it, but I don't quibble with the fact that they said, you know what, we take a hard look at ourselves. Let's get our financial situation together. As like Rob said, as presently constructed, we are not an NBA championship team. We aren't even close if we don't really want to be honest. So let's hit the reset button while we can and get something out of it and see where we can go from there. So it's going to put a lot of pressure now on Doc Rivers and that brain trust that if you make these deals and you get these picks back, now you've got to make the picks, right? It's all well and good to have the capital, but sometimes, you know, at some point those picks become actual players and they have to work out. So will Clippers go back to being the old Clippers? We'll see. But I agree. It was time to blow it up. Just can't see LeBron going there unless they get really something really good for Lou Williams and Jordan in terms of picks and or he's convinced somebody else to go with him. But I don't feel like they have building blocks where he says, hey, me and Paul George and me and free agent X, we can go to the Clippers because they have A, B, and C. Like, I don't see that there for them. So I think it's pie in the sky for them to say they're trying to clear for LeBron. But the inner workings and guys, you know, trying to get together to play with each other, you never know. But what's left on that Clipper roster, if you're LeBron and, you know, Russell Westbrook or Paul George and you're trying to go somewhere together, are you really looking at the Clippers? If you talk about Philadelphia, we talked about earlier with an Embiid or Simmons and or maybe even the Lakers or a couple other teams that may have some good building blocks. Do you go to – is the Clippers your choice outside of just being in L.A.?
I guess one thing you have to give the Clippers credit for with this is that they just moved their biggest contract. And the DeAndre Jordan piece, obviously with him being a free agent at the end of the year, may not be that hard to move because he's an expiring contract. And even push come to shove, if those guys just roll off the books this summer, you still got the cap space as well. So they just moved their biggest, obviously, liability with the contract of Blake Griffin. So that just freed up so much space for them. So I think that was one of the things that was to their advantage by moving him first, by moving that big contract off the books as well.
I think they should do it. Don't get me wrong. I think that was a good move for them. My only point of it is if I'm looking at it from a rival GM and you make that move first and you've got two other valuable pieces that other people have been talking about this whole time, and that because the Blake Griffin thing came from way out of left field. It's always been about Jordan and or Williams. If you move Blake first, now you've pretty much raised the white flag like, okay, we're in full rebuild mode. If I'm a GM and the other ones and I want Williams and I want Jordan, I'm likely to give less up for you. I'm going to push a much harder bargain right up to the deadline because I know you're desperately trying to make those moves at this point. You know, so that's the only thing. I'm not saying you're wrong. I think you're right because that contract was crazy for somebody that is as injury prone as he is. But him going first with those guys still sitting on the team, it's like, okay, I'm just going to wait the Clippers out because I know they're going to make a move because they don't want to – most GMs, if they know they have expiring contracts of guys that other people want, they don't want to just let them roll off the books. And it's great. I hear you in terms of clearing cap space, but you want to feel like you got something back in return for those guys, right? So I don't know if they'll make that move. That'd be bold of them to let it just roll off if they feel like somebody's trying to, you know, go, you know, lowball them, so to speak. But I need to see that happen first. I don't really see GMs making that move. They'll say, I'll take 20 cents on the dollar as opposed to getting 0 cents on the dollar. You know what I mean? Whereas if you flip the order, you make those moves, maybe you get 50 cents on the dollar. That's my only thing. But I still think it's a good move for them to try to, you know, hit the reset for that team because they had tapped out.
Absolutely. And obviously Blake Griffin is the hardest of the ones to trade because of the contract. And and that's basically what I was just saying. They were able to trade the hardest one right off the jump, which is a little bit of a surprise as well.
Detroit is – can we talk about Detroit and that how much money they have tied up in Drummond and Griffin now? I mean, you're talking about all in. with that front court, and that really goes away from what Stan Van Gundy normally does. He normally wants one big guy and four shooters. Now he's got two post guys, so to speak, or, you know, a four and a five, and he doesn't really have that spread, you know, spread him out like
Calvin
you know, in Orlando. Yeah, he's Calvin Murphy was clowning for that suit. But I'm surprised. I'm interested to see what Stan Van Gundy does as well. Is he going to, you know, be stuck in his, this is the offense that I run, or is he going to say, okay, I pushed to get Blake. Now I know I've got two front court guys. I can't do that, you know, center and four in space with four guys and shoot the three. I got to retool my offense. And how long does it take them to get it going, even though the Eastern Conference is open as far as I'm concerned, for him to make a move with, you know, two really good guys in Drummond and Griffin. But he doesn't have the shooters he normally has, and now it's really clogged. His spacing isn't what it normally is for the offense he likes to run.
Wow. Okay. Good call. Maybe some good insight. Gentlemen, we got 14 minutes here. Rob, let's set up fantasy shout-outs, sir.
All right, fantasy shout-out for the week. Let's see here. Actually, my team, Name Ward Rim Shakers, with a 7-1 win over the Jute last week. Chester from New Orleans, Pastor Rock, also with a 7-1 win over the Blue Devil All-Stars. And JQ's team, the Ohio Players, 7-1 over Madhouse on Madison. JQ's team still in first place with a 91-29 record. Congrats to everyone for this past week. Those are the fantasy shout-outs for the week.
Whoa.
Dre won 8-0.
I sure did.
Did he? I apologize.
Yeah.
I overlooked that. Sorry. Andre with 8-0 victory.
Go back, bro.
So I was like, oh, well, I'll take it, but I'm pretty sure Dre won 8-0. And I see you, Dre.
Yeah, bro.
I see you making a move on past the rock in a half game back. I see what you're doing down there.
Hell yeah. I'm just gonna play in the weeds, and then y'all do your thing. I'm coming out of nowhere. Take it. Just like I did Rob in the championship. That's right.
Oh, see? Oh, woo, shots fired.
With a 5-9 record. I'm still pissed about that.
He is not letting it go. He is not letting it go.
How you
like
even
I
allowed
before,
to be in the playoffs with that record?
It dampened it when I saw what happened to Rob.
Yeah, you're right.
Andre
with an 8-0 victory over Naptown Unibrows. I apologize. That's the biggest win of the week.
That's right, man.
Yeah, that's Rob.
Me.
I feel for
keep
you, bro.
Memorizing me. Yeah. No one cares.
Okay.
I'm just stopping.
No, I need you to do it this week against Saints Pelicans, and so does Rob. So
okay,
I need you to keep that mojo going this week.
What do I get out of this, though? Seriously. What do I get out of this?
Well, you get to prove your own team. That's what you get out of it.
Yeah, you try to get in first place in your division. That's a, you know, I helped you out. That's Rock. You helped me out with Saints Pelicans.
I got you. I'll take care of business. All right. Thanks, Rob, for recognizing. Thanks, JQ, for actually putting Rob on the map there and letting him know that.
Shows I'm human,
Drake.
America.
He's not a robot.
Yeah, no, for sure.
all right. And hopefully, guys, we can save some time, too. I do want to talk about the new XFL. I know, you know, if we get some time to talk about that, too, because, again, I think it's going to be a different league moving forward, too. But, again, let's keep it going here. Let's talk about Todd Gurley here. And good call on this. And I guess, JQ, the question is, should he be the NFL MVP? And what say you about that?
I mean, don't get me wrong. Todd Gurley had a fantastic year. But should he be? I think he should definitely be in the conversation. He should definitely be top three. But I don't think he's going to overtake Tom Brady. You talk about the Patriots, you know, win the division, the number one seed. I just can't see that. And then, you know, I think the votes, correct me if I'm wrong, but the votes have to be cast before the playoffs start, I think. So hopefully that doesn't detract from Gurley. I'm not sure on that, so you can check me on that. I think the votes have to be in. He had a fantastic season, but you also get so much credit when you talk about the Rams. We're quite like Todd Gurley's not the first thing that gets mentioned about the Rams. Is, oh my goodness, how good of a job Sean McVay did with Jared Goff and turning him around and how they did that. And then you get to Todd Gurley's season. And I think that it's not fair, but I think that's going to be the story of the Rams season of how they got a new young coach and he was able to turn around a quarterback who didn't look like he was living up to his billing that first year and that big turnaround. And then, oh, yeah, you know, the offensive line being revamped and Todd Gurley taking advantage of that. But I don't want to take away from what Todd Gurley did. I just I just don't see him winning it, I guess is my point, because of the narrative on the Rams season. And, of course, you got Tom Brady back in the freaking Super Bowl again with the year that the Patriots had. So, great season, Todd Gurley. You're going to get a top three MVP finish, which is huge. Don't get me wrong, because it's hard to even finish in the top three. But I don't think he's going to win.
Yeah, I agree. Todd Gurley finishes the regular season on fire. And I know we talked about this before. If you had him on your fantasy football team down the stretch, there's a good chance he led your team to the championship. He was just on fire those last 3 to 4 weeks. Obviously, he didn't play the last week of the season. But those 3 or 4 weeks prior to that last week, he was a monster on the football field, catching the ball out of the backfield, running the football as well. But still comes up a little short, in my opinion. May even be number two on the ballot as well. I mean, Carson Wentz, I think, was right there in the mix prior to his injury. So I think he may still get some votes as well. Mm-hmm. But it's got to be Tom Brady, unfortunately. You got to give it to him again. And it's probably not even close. Tom Brady wins it again. And a topic I thought about having on the show was, what's the greatest NFL rivalry in NFL history? Is it these Patriots? Is it the 49ers in the 80s? Is it the Cowboys in the 90s? Is it the Steelers in the 70s? And, you know, Tom Brady has a chance to win 6 Super Bowls in 8 years, in 8 tries, and another phenomenal year. To me, he's a clear-cut MVP.
That's a great question. I don't know if you can go wrong with any of those. I mean, yeah, but the numbers, if he gets to 6, I mean, you know, if he gets to 6, it's got to be the Patriots. I still think I put the 49ers right up there with him, but if he gets to 6, it's got to be New England. As much as it burns my tongue and my esophagus to say those words out loud, I don't know how you.
Yeah.
I don't know how you go against it, number wise.
Yeah, and I would have to give it to New England too. When you really think about it here, and just think about these New England teams. Obviously, you've had Belichick and Brady on all of these teams that have won these championships, and even a few that have lost. But just think about the rest of the rosters that they've had on these teams. They haven't had a lot of guys that were Hall of Famers while with the Patriots. And, I mean, just think about that. You think about those 49ers teams, I mean, they had Jerry Rice. They had Roger Craig. They had Wendell Tyler. Guys all over here, Ronnie Lott. They were loaded. When you think about the Steelers, all the talent they had, Franco Harris, Terry Bradshaw, Stalwart, Lynn Swan. I know you don't want to hear about the Steelers.
I know.
And then when you look at the Cowboys, you know, you had Emmitt, you had Irvin, you had Aikman. You had those guys on the defensive line and the offensive line, too. The Patriots just had a lot of moving parts, and they just still keep seeming to get there. And it's and it's a credit. To me, it's still mostly a credit to Bill Belichick, and how he's been able to just constantly have a steady flow of players coming in and out of there and still getting to the Super Bowl every year. It's phenomenal.
Yeah, in the beginning, though, they had some good defensive players. You talk about Bruschi and Malloy and Law and Willie McGinnis.
Richard Seymour, Ty Law. Yep.
Richard Seymour. Yeah. Offensive-wise, I totally get you. You're talking about Troy Brown as your best wide receiver for a couple of those. I mean – you know, no knock to Troy Brown, but come on.
I mean, you did have Randy Moss for a stretch, but you didn't have Randy Moss for the prime of his career. And and that's what I'm referring to. I mean, they got Darrell Revis on the back end of his career. It wasn't in his prime either. So you can't really say you got the Hall of Fame version of Darrell Revis. But for the most part, they've had a lot of moving parts, as you mentioned, JQ, except for that early years when they just had a lot of studs on defense.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, we got about 5 minutes here, about 5 minutes and 50-something seconds here. And let's talk about, as much as I can talk about the Patriots, can they beat the Eagles without Rob Gronkowski, Rob?
Well, first of all, I think Gronkowski is going to play in this game. I mean, the guy's had 2 weeks in between games with a concussion. I just think the media is always looking for something to talk about here. Come on. Mm-hmm. The guy's had 2 weeks in between. He's not. He's going to clear concussion protocol with a bye week in between the championship games and the Super Bowl. So he's going to play. That being said, right. If he doesn't play, I still think they can beat the Eagles. That is just what the Patriots do. And they just find a way. Just like we talked about that Jacksonville game, when Jacksonville was up 20-10, I still knew New England was going to win the game. They were just going to find a way to win that game.
Wow.
I mean, there was just no doubt in my mind. Watch, Brady's going to do something. They're going to find a way to win this football game. The referees only called one penalty on them the whole game. And they were just going to find a way to win that football game. But if Gronk somehow doesn't play, I think they would do the same thing. Well, I guess I gave everybody my prediction.
Yeah, and the thing about that is, I agree. I mean, they talking about he's already practicing full tilt. So I don't know how you don't clear for concussion protocol, but you can practice full tilt and pass. I just don't know how you marry those two things together in NFL. But I agree. And I think what killed Jacksonville is that they didn't have time to adjust the game plan. I'm hoping Philadelphia is still smart enough to think that he's going to play, because I agree with you, Rob. But when I watched that Jacksonville game, them still trying to put Telvin Smith and Miles Jack, no matter how quick and fast those guys are, they can't cover a slot receiver. And that's how you saw Amendola start to go crazy, because he always had a linebacker on him every time, and he was killing them with those option routes. And Philadelphia does not fall into that trap of trying to stay in that base defense and not want to go into that nickel and put in that slot corner and keeping them out there to cover that guy in the slot, so you don't put your linebackers in that position, because the Philadelphia doesn't have anybody at the linebacker core that's as quick as Miles Jack and Telvin Smith, and they got roasted. So they can't do that. So I think that they scheme-wise, if they take a look at that film and realize what they can't do when they try to do that, I think they could have a chance as well. But I don't think they're even going to have to worry about that, because I full-blown believe, you know, they were talking about Gronk was practicing full tilt at the beginning of the week, and that's what the thing said. He's practicing at full tilt. So if you're talking about Gronk practicing at full tilt, you know what you're getting, right? So I don't even understand how he did not clear the concussion protocol. It's I'm with you, Rob. It's something to try to drum up interest, but I can't see any scenario where he's not playing that game.
Mm-hmm. Rob, we got about to go ahead and set this
Andre
question
Drummond,
up. 21
points, 22 rebounds.
Good Lord.
Wow.
He says, my block and my rocks.
He's excited to get. All right, Rob, we got about 2 minutes and 45 seconds. We're going to do that in the OT portion.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, next week we're going to be doing another Tuesday night special for you on next week. Once again, it'll be Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Don't want to miss us. Obviously, we'll recap the Super Bowl, get you set for the offseason. As you're already aware, we've already got a major trade, Alex Smith going to the Washington Redskins. What's going to be the trickle-down effect with Kirk Cousins and so on and so on. Obviously, we've got the NFL draft, things of that nature, off-season, free agency, a lot to talk about here coming up in the weeks to come. Obviously, we're getting closer to NBA mid-season point, and we're closer to March Madness, so we got a lot to talk about here, people. You don't want to miss us on next Tuesday night. Good night. Click on the same link tomorrow for the OT portion. We still got some NFL to talk about here.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I appreciate everybody for listening to the show. And I'm really ready to get into some of these mock drafts. Shout out to Rob for putting those together for us as well, so we can delve into that in the combine. Oh, I so hate that the last football game is going to be the Eagles and the Patriots. But I'm going to watch, because I'm a full-blown junkie. But, oh, that's a sleight of candle, everybody. And remember, it's the NFL season, because we won't get any more NFL football here until late summer. So a little bummed about that, but we appreciate y'all, and we appreciate
NFL
the people who did not call
long.
In. Yes, it is. I just want to say, we appreciate the people who did not call in with that foolishness. Don't call us with that foolishness, because you might get cussed out. And by Mike, you will get cussed out. So, you know, keep that foolishness to yourself, and we'll haunt you next week.
Nice. JQ regulated. We got about y'all finished that really quickly. I was gonna say, Rob, if you want to talk about that last point and then switch over here, but it's all good. We'll keep it going. And did you guys hear anything about the new XFL? I know we're talking about you know, our thoughts. Mm-hmm. Since football is kind of ending here, but I am kind of intrigued, because Didn't know if you guys watched NFL Europe. That was pretty pathetic, but it was something. And then I really do think that the way that Vince McMahon is trying to set this up, set it up so that it's going to play like right after, like right, I think, close to like the playoffs or the middle of that. 10 games, they're going to have a championship, and then they're going to go right into, if you're playing, you're going to go right into, I guess, minicamp or like that for that. But I think it's a pretty interesting opportunity. But anyway, we'll talk about that. We got about 10 seconds here. For people that are hanging on, appreciate you listening to the show, and tell your friends. Anyway, again, we don't have to dive too deep on that. I just figured that was pretty interesting because, again, I think after you realize that the first iteration of that league was just terrible, the concept was there. But now if you take a step back and say, all right, you know, maybe we're not trying to completely compete against the NFL, but you have a second opportunity to see maybe guys needed more time to develop, and now they have the opportunity to do that. So I think it's going to be interesting. So I don't know if you want to have your thoughts on that, JQ. Again, we don't have to talk too much about that, but just wanted to get your feedback on that.
Wasting his money.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if he's wasting his money, because I think the thirst for the football is still there. What I will say, and when I heard him talk about the no criminals and there will be no politics and there will be no kneeling, that's the piece of it that caught my attention. And, you know, not to delve into it and how nobody calls for that ridiculousness, but what does that do to your talent base for – and not to say that all the talented people are criminals, because that's not what I mean. But if you put those kind of restrictions on your league and say that, oh, it's like, okay, you know, what is it? Is it a misdemeanor? Is it a felony in terms of no criminals? Where do you draw the line? And then the biggest piece of that is – what if you piss guys off with that no kneeling piece, no politics? It's like, well, wait a minute, you know, I got principles, and, you know, I'll keep plugging away trying to make the NFL outside of you, Mr. McMahon, in the XFL, if you're going to, you know, put this in here. That's his right, so to speak. You know, it might be a little constitutional, but the kneeling and whatnot, having to stand for the anthem. But do you piss off even, you know, that lower tier of players that would come play for you when you tell them, hey, you've got to do this, and they're looking like, hey, man, I'm knee-deep in the community. I'm doing these things. I don't appreciate you trying to put that restriction on me right out the gate, so I'm just going to pass. Mm-hmm. How many people put their livelihood of trying to make it to the NFL? Because let's be honest, they're going to use the XFL to try to make the NFL. How many of them put their livelihood above their principles? I'm just interested to see that, and I'm not blaming anybody for either stance they take. I'm just interested to see how that dynamic works when he has come out and publicly said that right out the gate. Does he say that with a hard line? Does he soften it? If people start to pull out, that dynamic I want
to soften it. He's going to soften it. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead, Rob. Your thoughts real quick.
Well, I personally think Vince McMahon is making a huge mistake. But with everything that JQ just said, and I just think from a financial investment standpoint, he's making a bad business decision here. All of these leagues have failed here in the last 30-something years. Any other football league that has come out have all failed. USFL was probably the most successful one going back in the 80s, and they were the only league that was actually able to pour in some top talent into the league. I mean, you had Sam Mills, Vaughn Johnson, Jim Kelly. You had Doug Flutie,
Young, right?
You know, Bobby Hebert, Herschel Walker. I mean, you had a strong talent pool, Herschel Walker running for the New Jersey Generals. Y'all remember that?
Yeah, I do.
USFL in the 80s. They were the only one that was somewhat successful, and they still went bankrupt. So all of these leagues, from a business standpoint, it's a bad decision by Vince McMahon. It's not going to be successful. They're going to lose money. They're going to be over here in a couple of years. Vince McMahon, you want to make money in football, find a way to partner with the NFL, find a way to purchase your own team. That's the way you're going to make money in football right now. And to me, what he's doing is, I know it may be a little thirst, but it's just not going to be a great investment. It's not going to be smart from a business standpoint. It will not be profitable. It's going to be another belly-up league, in my opinion. Like I said, if you're into football, want to be involved with football, partner with the NFL, buy your own team, do something like that, hey, that will be a better investment. From a business standpoint.
But you know, the piece of that is that his wife is on one of the cabinets for Donald Trump. So they're in with Trump. And, you know, Trump has been criticizing the NFL for all the politics that I talked about. So I think that's why you see him saying that and not trying to go that route. I think that's him. And to an extent, maybe some Trumpism in there of we're going to take them down and make our own thing and show them that, hey, yeah, we told you guys were going under. We're going to make sure you go under. I'm not saying it's going to happen. But I'm only making that point to you to counter your point in terms of try to back into the NFL. I don't think that's what he wants. I think he wants to try to rival the NFL, and I think he's got some cahoots with, you know, his cronies, so to speak, of they aren't doing it the right way. Let's show them how we can do it and with the people that we feel we have backing us to try to, you know, take the NFL down a notch or two. You may never fully overtake the NFL, but try to leave the playing field a little bit and say, ha, see, I told you if you did it our way, it could work and it could still be profitable and it could still be enjoyable. I think that's a really big piece of it. And don't think it's not any coincidence this is happening during the Trump, you know, his tenure as presidency. I think that's a piece of it.
Excuse my terminology for all my listeners out there, but the rednecks will not watch this trash. The rednecks is not going to turn on his TV and watch this trash football coming out of the XFL. They're not going to even tune into it. The rednecks are back watching the NFL. It was early in the season. It was all this boycott and stuff, foolishness. The rednecks are back. The rednecks are back watching NFL. They've gotten over all of that. They're back watching the NFL. They're not going to be watching this XFL foolishness. The rednecks in Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, they are all back watching the NFL. The ratings got off to a rough start this year, but they rebounded. The rednecks are back.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just trying to point out the other pieces for
in the SEC. They back watching that. They watching college football. And they're going to be watching the NFL. Those rednecks are back. They're not going nowhere.
Send all your emails to robford@12sports.com.
I love it. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying, Rob. I'm not saying that. I was only making the point of why he didn't try to tune into getting a franchise in the NFL versus trying to do his own thing. I think that's a big part of it, as misguided as it might be. I still think that's a big part of it. I just don't think people are really touching on it to that point.
I agree, JQ. Yeah. It's kind of interesting. Like I said, you know, he may not try to, like, he's not trying to, you know, take over the NFL as of yet, but just kind of provide an alternative. And again, if I know it's really weird, but if you make a lot of mistakes, you learn a lot. The XFL, as much as mistakes that were made and the craziness about it, and, you know, he's learned a lot of things from that. We're not saying that, you know, it's going to be overtake the NFL by any means, but I'm kind of curious to see what's going to happen too. So, you know, I don't know.
I think the point I'm trying to make here is this. I think whether you're, you know, black, redneck, white, whatever your nationality is, people are going to watch what entertains them the most. The NFL is going to have the best talent. That's what people are going to watch. And that's the point. I mean, he can come up with all these antics and come up with these different things about what some of the fans were upset with. But ultimately, the average person, I mean, I have not even average, 9 out of 10 people are going to watch whatever entertains them the most. When you look at a rapper, or you look at any kind of artist, they could be controversial, but if they're producing the best music, those are the ones who are going to sell out stadiums and arenas across the world. And whoever has the best, this is entertainment, whoever has the most talent, whoever's putting out the best records, whether they're controversially or not, they're going to be the ones who sell the most tickets. They're going to be the ones that are going to be most successful.
All right. Shout out to Dre for putting this in the show. I like it.
Yeah, and like I said, again, there are reasons why I thought about that, because I don't think it's going to be anything like the old XFL. That's my point. It's going to be pretty different. So we're not sure what it is.
I agree.
I don't think it's going to be like
Yeah, with the he hit thought. Me on the back
yeah.
and all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't think it's going
to
be
yeah.
like that.
Oh, yeah. He hate me.
That's why I'm curious.
Yeah, he hate
me. Yes, that's classic. Yeah, he hate me. He hit me. That's funny. All right. Very, very interesting topic here. We got Deion Sanders versus Rob Woodson. Who was the better defensive back? And I'm going to let JQ, you want to start this one off, bro?
Oh, man, that is so tough because Woodson was just a ball hawk. But you go back to our show last week and my top five, I got to go with Deion. You know, Deion was just such a freak of nature that sometimes it just felt like he wasn't even really trying and he was still making plays. Like, if he focused just exclusively on football, you know, and was full on into it. Like, I believe he loves football.
That's a good call.
Don't get me wrong. But But he had so much other sad stuff going on, especially with the baseball and, you know, marketing himself. But Woodson was just – I mean, he was a dog, and I don't want to take anything away from Woodson. I think he might be the all-time interception leader, if I'm not mistaken, or he's up there. But Deion was just so electric. You know, you almost held your breath every time he was even near the ball, let alone touch the ball on defense, you know, returning kicks. I just have a hard time putting any cornerback over Deion, especially growing up in that era where he was just the junk, so to speak. You know, I'm not going to curse, so try to not curse every week. But I got to go with Deion, but it's a really tough call because Woodson was flat out phenomenal.
Yeah. Rob?
Yeah, I have to go with Deion, too. The one thing that you have to give credit to Rob Woodson for toward the end of his career after he had the major knee injury, he was able to adjust and transition to play the safety position and did it at a high level, too. And so he was able to make that transition post-injury and still be very successful as a defensive back, albeit transferring from cornerback to free safety. He transitioned to that very well and still played at a Pro Bowl level as free safety. But I would. It's probably a little bit closer than what we think. But I think overall you got to go with Deion. Deion was just the ultimate playmaker on defense too. You didn't want to throw the ball his side of the field because he had great ball skills. Because if he picked it off, it was a great chance he was going to take it the other way to the house. And so I mean, when you look at that element of the game. He was an offensive player playing defense. When you look at the amount of touchdowns he had from the defensive side of the football field. But I think it's a little bit closer than what we think, though. But I think ultimately definitely Deion is the better of the two when you look at a defensive back.
Yeah, totally definitely. Agree. And it's not a knock on Rod Woodson because, like you said, he was a phenomenal player. And I was going to bring
Rod Woodson was physical, too.
Yeah, and the fact that he set the transition.
That's the one area he has over Deion, is that he was
100%.
Way more physical.
100%. But like I said, Deion was like so – but like you said, you think about defensive backs, guys, they're always being compared. I mean, Deion set like – I mean, is his record still safe as far as, you know, that 4.2, you know, whatever, 40 time? I mean,
I think Chris Johnson
about the fact
beat it.
That, we'll verify. But anyway, but like I said, still for a defensive back, for that – you know, just literally when you think about the greatest 21s and, you know, that's kind of like his number, if you will, that most defense back throwers compare themselves as one of being the greatest as far as being Deion Sanders. And then you talked about him being electric, JQ as far as, and same thing, Rob, as far as him turning from offense to defense. And just he did so many things to impact the game, man. So even afterwards, too, man, as far as coaching and just swag, whatever you want to call it, too. So, again, not a knock to Rod Woodson because Rod, like you said, that switch to safety and then high level was very, very impressive. So, you know, again, just it's tough to compare. So I do think they're kind of different style players, but, you know, in that instance. But, you know, 100% on that. All right, we got two more topics here. Two more topics. We're talking about the catch rule. What should the NFL do about the catch rule, Rob?
This one's really a tough topic. And I know Roger Goodell, the Hitler, is even going to be involved in that conversation during this offseason to try to fix, you know, the NFL's concerns in that. Obviously, I still like the NFL rule of having 2 feet inbounds. So I don't think they should go to the college rule, and I don't think they will switch to the college rule when it comes to that. I know there's been some conversation to try to keep it kind of consistent with the college rule. And but I personally don't think they should make any drastic changes to the NFL rule with the catch rule. Definitely keep the 2 feet in bounds. I definitely think they need to maintain possession of the football all the way to the ground. It's the NFL, so you got to make it a little bit tougher than what it is in peewee football, what it is in high school football, and what it is in college football. So I do like the rule of making sure they maintain possession all the way to the ground. So I personally don't want to see any changes to it. Keep the 2 feet in bounds, maintain possession all the way to the ground on all the catches, and let's just play big boy football.
Oh, wow.
Yes, sir.
I agree with that. I don't think they should make drastic changes, but that going to the ground piece, they've got to tweak because, I mean, your eyeball tells you also what a catch is. If I catch the ball with 2 feet down and I turn and I go down and I've got possession of the ball going to the ground and then I hit the ground and it pops out, I still think that's a catch. If I was going to the ground and I had possession all the way down, but then the jarring of the nose of the ball hit the ground and it moved it, but I had it 2 feet, made a move and went down, I still think that should be a catch. You talk about the Dez Bryant and the Megatron, like those are catches. When you see those on film, you know those are catches. And that piece of it, I see what they're trying to do. If you're bobbling the ball on the way to the ground and it comes loose, then no, that's not a catch. But if you've got firm possession of the ball going to the ground, and you know, I would like to go back to the ground can't cause a fumble kind of thing for a catch. If you got possession and you go to the ground, you've got possession and it hits the ground, then it's still a catch to me. If the ball skirts the ground, but you've got, you know, the nose of the ball skirts the ground, but you got two hands around 98% of the ball and you've got it, I still think that's a catch. It's going to still be open to some bit of, you know, interpretation, but just that automatic that, you know, the ball wiggled 2 inches when it went to the ground, so it's no longer a catch. I don't like that piece of it, but I agree. No 1 foot, you know, I don't want them to make crazy changes to it. I think it's mostly right, but they've got to tweak that going to the ground piece of it, just a small tweak.
Yep, good call. All right.
Yep, Hitler said he's going to be involved in it this year, so we'll see how it goes.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, good luck with him in the room.
Okay. Yeah, good luck with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Rob is all in. All in.
All right, let's wrap this up here. And let's talk about the last topic, the Super Bowl prediction of the night. And I think this is no shock where we're going, but I'll let you lead it off, JQ, and we'll get ready to end up the show, Rob, after this.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to make it real simple. Because you know where I'm going. Who's quarterbacking for Philadelphia? Nick Foles, right? Who's quarterbacking for New England? Tom Brady, right? Yeah, I'm going with Tom Brady in New England and Bill Belichick. I mean, listen, I would love for New England not to win. I think everybody that knows me knows that. But if I'm going to put money down on anything, or are you going to say, hey, from your years of watching football and your honest analytical, you know, perspective, I'm going to say Tom Brady. He's been there. He's done that. I really think this could be a last hurrah for them. I said that before when you talk about losing your coordinators, because I know we talked about, you know, in and out of players, but, you know, sometimes that brain trust, what he has happening, you lose, talking about losing your offense, your defense, and your special teams guys. Tom Brady's still going to be on the other side of the 40 here going into next year. I just think it's the way they go out and stamp it. I think it's going to be a good game. I don't think they blow Philadelphia out, but I feel like, like we talked about with Jacksonville, I feel like, you know, New England makes another play or two down the stretch where Nick Foles can't make that play against the New England defense, even though he should be, because New England defense isn't great, but he's still Nick Foles. And I feel like Tom Brady finds a way to get it done, especially I think Gronk is going to play as well. So I'm going to go with New England, you know, 28-25 with Kowski playing the Vinatieri role, and they win the game.
Rob.
Yeah, that's a good call. I like New England by touchdown in this one. I think it's going to be something like 27-20. I think having Gronkowski for the whole game is really going to help them give Brady another big target in the offensive game. You give Bill Belichick a couple of weeks to prepare. I think he puts up enough of a defensive scheme to where he can rattle Nick Foles. I think he's going to find those weaknesses for Nick Foles' game, even though New England's defense is not that great. But you give him 2 weeks to prepare. One of the most master defensive schemes I've ever seen is on the 1990 Super Bowl when the Giants played the Buffalo Bills. And the Bills had this firepower offense, and Bill Belichick was the defensive coordinator for the Giants. And the Bills were actually favored in that Super Bowl. And the Giants slowed them down with just on a two-man defensive line, with dropping 9 men in coverage, and confused Jim Kelly the entire game. And if he can confuse Jim Kelly, you best believe he's going to find a way to throw some wrinkles at Nick Foles in this game. So I think they win. They get enough defense. They get more offense than Philly does. And I think it's going to be 27-20. The Eagles will go down in defeat and lose another Super Bowl, and the Patriots to win another one.
Hey, Rob, Scott Mitchell don't have to worry about that whatsoever.
60 points, 11 assists, 10 rebounds. Damn.
Yeah, I told you. All right, bro.
James fucking Harden. I told you. Yeah. Good God.
Let's go ahead and wrap up the show, Rob.
All right, we ended a little bit earlier than we have in recent weeks. We thank you all for tuning in once again. Like I said, on next week, we still got a lot of NFL recap. Get you ready for the offseason, NFL draft. Give you a little sneak peek into NFL free agency as well. We're getting into the heart of the NBA and college basketball season, so we'll have all of that covered for you. Next week, we'll be on Tuesday night again, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Good night, people.
Yes, sir. I appreciate everybody for listening, and I texted you guys about it, and we get a chance to talk about it, and it just came to my mind. You know, Russell Westbrook is so petty, and I love the fact where he just stared down Embiid after Embiid dunked on him, which should have been a charge. But when he was dribbling the clock out, he was, you know, craning his neck to look at Embiid in the corner because Embiid, you know, is a big talker. I just love Russell Westbrook's pettiness, and it went all the way back to that first meeting when Embiid, you know, was waving his hand when Adams got fouled out of the game, and then Russell Wade told him, Thompson, you know, go home at the end of the game when Oklahoma City won. Like, he didn't forget anything, and I love the fact that, you know, it feels like now that some of these, you know, bromances, so to speak, are being broken up a little bit, and that competitive fire that, you know, I'm trying to take you out, and, you know, we ain't cool. I love that's coming back, so I hope our listeners that saw that, I appreciate that as well, and hopefully they feel the same way that I think that we all feel too, that, you know, it's okay to be cool, but, you know, all this, you know, hugging each other up and, you know, dinner, you know, before and after and all that other foolishness, go out there and try to, you know, stop on somebody's throat and take them down and say, hey, yeah, you're not going to be talking that junk to me, bro, and I'm going to let you know about it when I win this game. I love that about him, you know, hashtag petty. So I hope all my NBA fans out there are loving it as well, and tune in to us so we can keep talking about this NBA. I think it may be foregone. We think Golden State is going to win it, but with all these injuries and moving parts, I think we got a really good second half of the NBA season on its way. I'm excited for it. I hope y'all are too, and we talk to you next week.
And OKC quietly is kind of turning things around. I know we were early in the season. We were talking about them a lot on the show, mm-hmm. and how they were having trouble gelling with Carmelo and Paul George. But they've quietly righted the ship there. And they're sitting at number 5 in the Western Conference, which could be an intriguing matchup in the first round with Minnesota, and with the winner of that matchup possibly going against Golden State in the second round. I mean, that could very well be a very intriguing matchup, both of those series, by the way.
NBA would love that. Would love it. Yep. They might fix it.
Yeah, and Minnesota's no slouch, but obviously an OKC Golden State second round matchup would be what everybody would love to see, Westbrook against Durant. And
yes.
And you know, it was a real interesting thing about Kevin Durant. Obviously LeBron picked him on his All-Star team, but Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green is on the other side over there. And Kevin Durant made the comment, it's going to be fun trying to beat those guys. And, you know, obviously the first thing everybody's thinking about, why didn't you stay with OKC if it was going to be fun trying to beat those guys?
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
All good.
I am looking forward to that.
Yep. All good. All right, gentlemen. Again, it's been a pleasure sharing this little battle with you. Please make sure you guys are safe as we are traveling through the week. And we will have the next show on Tuesday, America. As always, peace out, and thank you so much. Good night, fellas.
Good night, people.
All right, good night, brother.
Good night, people.
Good night.
Good night.